Hello, this is Christina Roberts Enneking, and I am here to welcome you to the Real Eyes Realize podcast. This is a podcast that highlights everyday people making ripple effects, actualizing love in their families, communities, and our world at large. This podcast was created to amplify the voices of those who are creating change in our world with this inner knowing, this truth-telling that is deeply inspiring to listeners, so that together we can spread the good work of positive ripple effects throughout the world. Realize Realize is a show where life and service can dance together. So we look forward to inviting you to take a listen, sit back, or take us with you on your walk or drive or however you enjoy your podcasts. But I invite you to listen deeply. We're here with our guests to hear about the sparks that have inspired action and heart-centered service, and truly highlight ways in which we can also be motivated and inspired to create positive ripple effects in our world. And we are prepared to get real. We're excited for you to hear these stories of vulnerability, courage, and empathy, and we want to know more about how we can see beauty through the eyes of these beautiful beholders. So look forward to hearing what your thoughts are. And again, welcome. Welcome to this wonderful next episode with our very special guest.
So I would love to, on our Realize Realize podcast, welcome our listeners to our next guests here today. They are Rick and Angela Miller, and they are just the most loving couple, and you will hear more about their story. I'm so excited for our listeners to hear from Rick and Angela. I will have full transparency. Angela is my cousin. We grew up as we were sisters. Yeah, she's my sister. She has been ever since the day we both came into our own family of origin, and I'm just so lucky to have Angela in my life. And I have been fortunate enough to meet Rick recently. They have wed and tied the knot about a month ago, so around September timeframe in 2023. And it's been really a pleasure to get to know Rick. And for both of them, it's their second marriage. And we'll be talking a lot today about just really going to plan B and just kicking the bejeebus out of it and just finding happiness and finding love, particularly when it feels like that might not be around the corner. So I welcome Angela and Rick. Thank you so much for being here. How are you doing today? Feeling good?
Yeah, doing good. Thank you.
Awesome. Good to see you. Good to see you too. And for all of our listeners, it's really wonderful to get to hear. And of course, when we have two guests, we have both Rick and Angela with us. We'll be kind of going back and forth between the two and really want to hear from both, because I think they both share their own perspectives. But then collectively, we'll get to hear probably some common threads. So I am going to kick this off. I'd love to have each of you share a little bit about your personal story, whether or not it's key memorable moments that got you to where you are, or stepping stones that you feel kind of help define this embracing plan B. So I'll let, should we say ladies go first? Angela, you want to kick it off?
First, I guess I want to start off by saying, and this is what I tell everybody that goes through a divorce, there is life after divorce. And it's so true. And I was told that, and it's very, very true. There is life after divorce. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be single your whole life. If you want to be, that's fine. But there is love and life after divorce. And approximately 7-8 years ago, I was told that somebody was no longer in love with me, and they just wanted to go another direction and things, and that they had fallen out of love. And long story short, there was no working on it. He had pretty much had one foot out the door and was moving in that direction. And we tried counseling, but he was not, he was pretty much done. And even my counselor kind of finally had to say to me one day, you got to stop, you know, let him go. Just let him go, because he's gone. And he had moved out pretty quickly. And that was my story my whole life. It was a 180. I can honestly tell you I was blindsided. In fact, my mother was the one that kind of finally told me, you need to wake up and probably go get an attorney, because I think he's going to do this. And sure enough, I went to go start to interview attorneys, and one of the ones that I interviewed, and I was just in a daze. And the attorney called me and he said, you need to pick one fast because I want you to know if he filed.
Filed for a divorce.
Records, yeah, that he had already filed. And then long story short, yeah, I got something in the mail and he didn't even tell me in person. That's how I found out. And so to say that I was blindsided is an understatement. And so it was devastating. We have two children, and I remember still to this day, one of the hardest days of my life is having to look at those two kids at this kitchen table and tell them that, that we were getting a divorce. And I remember they both ran off in a ball of tears, I mean, in the fetal position. And there's so much anger. Anyway, so that's what happened. Yeah. So much anger. That was it. And then, you go through all the emotions and then,
And we'll hear more about the story of how the two of you met, because I want to get into that. But thank you for giving that bit of a preface. And Angela, your kids are how old now, so that we have an idea of how old they were when this all took place?
They're 13 and 14 now. So yeah, they were about third and fourth grade when it happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can understand where that, you know, their whole world got shooken up, as did yours. And the devastation that you describe, I remember witnessing, not an easy time. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. How about Rick? Can you give us a little Reader's Digest of your story? And then we'll go into how the two of you met as well.
Yeah, and I'll try to get to the Cliff Notes version for sure. So
I get windy.
Similar to
it's all good.
Angela, you know, there was an incident in my marriage that caused us to start talking about getting divorced. And, you know, we tried the counseling thing, same deal. It just really didn't work out. And so we ended up filed for divorce, actually. And when you get married, that's the last thing you ever plan on doing, right? It was almost 20 years. When you fight for that marriage, and then you realize, at least I realized, that was probably ongoing for 5, 6, 7 years of just, I mean, it really wasn't a healthy marriage to begin with. So you think you're losing something, but, and you are, you know, you're breaking up a family and things like that. And kind of what she said, one thing that you would hear a lot from people is, hey, time heals all. And that's the last thing you actually want to hear when you're going through that stuff, because it's just like so cliche.
Yeah.
But it's also so true. Is that it does take some time. And then as time progressed and you do start to recover and realize that there is, as she mentioned, life after divorce. And, you know, for us, it took a few years, you know, we'll get into that here in a little bit, but, you know, for some, maybe it's longer than others, but, it does happen over time. And so I have four kids, they're currently 26, 22, 19, and 16. So if we wind that back, you know, 7, 8 years ago, it was about the same time frame as her. So they were, my oldest at the time was a senior in high school. So what a horrible thing that she had to go through and then go off to college with their parents getting divorced and things like that. And then the rest. So yeah, the kids take it tough, but they've all recovered very, very well, which I'm sure we'll get into here in a little bit. And that's kind of a brief synopsis of what happened on my end.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And what we will be getting into is everything from what do you wish people might have said, you know, rather than time will heal, and how that could be maybe triggering and charging. So how can we give guidance for friends and supporters of people that are going through tough times for how to be? But then also, what a model the two of you have been for your children around being able to be vulnerable, sharing emotions, and at the same time, springing back and finding love again. And now I think the two of you, you really prioritize blending your family and the kids. And I really do want to dig into that. So let's first start with how the two of you met. I'm curious, and either one of you, you guys just take the baton and let us know that.
Or the 20-minute version.
One of you just choose the baton and go.
Also on my side. So, you know, I remember I didn't even go anywhere. I remember my mom came over one time and she said, okay, you know, it's time to get out of the bedroom. Like, you know, we're going to have to face life eventually. And, you know, there's a real depression that happens when this all happens. So, but fast forward, as you start to kind of, you know, recover. And for me, and this is what I always tell people, it's like, I didn't have children to see them, you know, half the time, you know, because as you go through divorce, then you're starting to do the custody and all this kind of stuff, you know, it's kind of like you kind of start thinking, well, I'm over you. I don't need you, but I, my children are the most important thing. So long story short, you kind of start thinking, well, you know, I'll just be single the rest of my life. And some people do go that route. Like I've talked to people and they say, you know, they never want to get married before. I always knew in my gut though, I always wanted a partner. I absolutely loved being married. I loved having a husband. I wanted to do life with somebody and I always did. So months after the divorce, I remember I was at the pool with my neighbor and good friend, and she basically, we were chatting and she said to me, "Are you ready to date?" And I kind of just said, I hesitated for a little bit because that's just something you think about, but you don't know if you're ready for and you want, and then you're obviously trying to, you know, if I was single, if I didn't have kids, you know, you just think very differently. But when you have two kids, you put a lot of thought into every single move you make. I told her, I think I am. Because like Rick said too, as I look back now, that it was a very, very lonely marriage. And
Your first marriage.
And it was more of a business relationship. I mean, we tried our best and we thought we were in love at the time, but as you look back, it was just sort of probably put together for maybe some wrong reasons. So I think I had been lonely for many, many years, even though I was married. So I told her, I said, you know, I think I am. And she said, I have somebody for you. And she said, she told me this months later, and I always thought this was very sweet. She goes, the minute you told me you were getting a divorce, I thought of him. So that's how
as compatible with you, like she kind of had could see the two of you together.
I thought that was interesting because she had known him and I didn't know him. So yeah, that's how it happened. So and then she worked fast and furiously and ran into his daughter at a function and worked her magic. And pretty soon he was calling me.
Yeah. Rick, okay, so now we have the framework of this. You fill it in with color from your perspective. What else would you add?
Well, you've heard the story already, but I'll give it to the rest of the world here. So her friend Molly saw my daughter, and I knew Molly for years and she knew Angela for years. Me and Angela didn't know each other, which was crazy.
Because you ran in similar circles in a way, right?
Kind of. We were a little bit younger, but we were separated by this much. I mean, we were in the same school, same church, everything.
Right, one degree.
Crazy.
Did not know each other.
So, Molly had talked to my daughter. When my daughter came home, you know, I said, hey, what's this? Did you see this Angela girl that Molly's talking about? And my daughter said, yeah, I think she might be a little bit out of your league.
So cute.
Which
spoken like a true daughter of a dad, right?
So anyway, I just kind of laughed, and then Molly was texting me, and so the rest is kind of history. I got Angela's number, I called her up and asked her on a date, and we met for a blind date, and you know, even on a wedding invitation, we said we never looked back, and it's actually true. We went on a blind date, you know, 4.5 years ago, whatever it is now, and one date I asked her out for a second date on the spot that night, and it just continued, and we just continued to go on dates and get to know each other, and go on walks, and we went to church, and we went out to eat, and we did all kinds of things, and we really got to, I think the reason we're so successful today and so in love today is because we got to know each other in a very, very deep connection before, you know, going out and partying or whatever you want to do, some people do when they get divorced, and so we spent a lot of time, like, really getting to know each other.
Yeah, we just kept it really simple. Walks, I did not meet his children, nor did he meet mine for a while. We kept it very private. A lot of walks and a lot of church dates. We'd go to mass and then, cause we're both Catholic, and then we'd go out to eat afterwards.
Yeah.
And, we kind of were just, one of the ways that I handled it and is rather than being out and about, I really surrounded myself with just really close knit people. And I flew very much under the radar. And I think that was very key to, my therapy, I guess, or just kind of getting better, because I don't know. I just kept it really simple.
Yeah. Well, I think I want to kind of tag on to that for a moment, because we talked a little bit about this with our intro call, the intake call, around close friends and having a very small group of people that are close to you that are the ones that you share with. Would you care to say a little bit more about that and just how important that was for you?
Yeah, no, for some reason, that was just the way I handled it versus going out and being really social and telling my, you know, being talkative about it. I surrounded myself with a really, really strong tribe, and I call them my tribe. And it's still true. And many of those people are still in my life, and it consisted of the chief tribe person that would be my mom.
Oh, she'll be happy to hear that you called her chief.
The chief title, because, she was very instrumental in, I guess, helpful and getting me back on my feet. I always tell people I wouldn't be here without her. I'd be on the streets probably, because she was a bulldog. She was a pit bull. Even when we were going through all the, you know, the custody and all that kind of stuff, I would have probably folded like a fajita, because you just want it over with, and you just want, you know, you don't care, and you're just not in a good place. So thank goodness I had her, sort of as my advocate. And then, you know, after that, I would just say it was my family. I just, you know, my brother, my sister-in-law, and then those are just the people that I chose to kind of hang out with. And then just a few really strong women.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. You know, it's funny, too. I don't know if you knew that our the nickname for my dad was Chief, too. I don't know if you knew that. So that was one thing. In fact, we almost were going to put on his death certificate, the chief. And then my brother Matt got really upset about that. But the chief, I do see that. And so given that my dad and your mom are brother and sister, I think that's kind of cute.
Yeah. Yeah. She was. I mean, yeah, she was. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Strong advocate for sure.
Strong. Yep. Well, plus she'd been through it before too, as well. So that was sort of helpful, because she'd been through it. And so she was able to sort of guide me and give me very, very good advice.
That's great. Now, Rick, when you tell us a little bit more about how mindful it was for the two of you to introduce one another to your children when that moment finally happened, when you knew that this was something deep and something special, and then how you took that next step, because I know that you were very deliberate about that, the two of you.
Yeah. And it was really two different paths, because, you know, as I mentioned, my kids were older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and then obviously my second daughter, Morgan, was pretty intertwined in the deal, because she was part of, you know, Molly talking to her to set us up. So my girls were pretty intrigued to meet her fairly early as we were starting the date. So she met them sooner than I met her kids, which was fine, because once again, they were older and they were kind of over the divorce by then and things like that, too. So we had kind of gone through all of our bumps. Not that it was easy yet, but, you know, it was a lot easier. So
the receptivity of your girls were like more open is what I'm hearing.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. And so we just took them out to eat neutral ground, you know, instead of having them to the house or something like that. So and just spent the night and just had some time and didn't take my son. It was just the girls the first time. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So just the girls.
Yep.
And her. And so kind of like me and her, they just hit it off right from the start, too. They loved her right away. And, you know, they just continued to grow as well. And then. Yeah. And I don't know, the first time I met her, she was just like a breath of fresh air, you know, and she still is. Like, it's just, there's something, she has that glow about her. I don't know what it is, but when you start
to love,
and maybe I should say this later, but getting off topic a little bit here with the kid stuff, but, I felt like I was starting to love her fairly quick, you know, within maybe a few 3 to 6 months in, I'm like, I might love this girl. And then you start to think, you can't love someone that fast. And, you know, at first it was nothing like it is today, but there was just something about her, and it never left. And it continues to get stronger. Even after we've been married for a month, I love her more than I did the day we got married. And so it's just kind of awesome. Crazy. Sorry, back to the kids.
Sounds to me. No. I mean, this is how podcasts go. Like, it's to the story, the core of the story. And I love what comes out organically. What I'm hearing is that there's a spark, and you knew the spark right away. Mm-hmm. And what's cool is it feels like it's almost like kindling, and it just is continuing to get strong. Like, this is a spark that is not going out like, and I think the way you said it in the intake call is you know this is the love of your life, the two of you. This is the forever.
It's different this time around for sure.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we sort of healed together. We had a very similar story. Mm-hmm. You know, so we had that common thing. So I would say we really kind of healed together.
Yeah.
You know, we were really vulnerable and those, you know,
getting through the tough spots. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about that, but I'd like to hear, first of all, Angela, how you introduced Rick to your kids. And since they were a little younger, how receptive mm-hmm. they were, or if there was pushback, because you said they were middle school, right? Mm-hmm. So what was that like for you?
They weren't as, it was, first of all, it was how many months?
It was late? Almost a year.
It was almost a year.
Okay.
Which was intentional.
Yeah, which was intentional.
This was very smart.
Uh-huh. I mean, they kind of knew. I had kind of told them, you know,
they knew about me.
They knew about him, but they had not met him. So, yeah, I put a lot of thought into that. And I think, I had invited Rick over just for pizza, just for a couple hours. And actually, looking back, it's funny. Yeah. So my daughter was pretty excited, but I will tell you, both my kids went to counseling right away. My daughter was released pretty quickly from counseling. Even the counselor said, I think she's good. And to this day, she just got through it a little bit easier. And I don't know if that's because she's a female. I don't know if that's because her and I are a lot alike and we talked a lot. Yeah. And I would say my son had a much harder time. But so when Rick came over and he just brought a pizza, and she right away sat at the table and she just talked a million miles an hour, which is what she still does. She was very much herself. Yeah. And then my son, actually, he had a harder time. He wouldn't come down. He was a little bit, he was much more shy. In fact, we kind of had to, you know, he wouldn't come down. And finally I said, why don't you just come down and meet him? And how come? And I kind of went up there and I said, how come you're not coming down? He goes, you know why? Anyway, so then we kind of laugh now because here is honestly what happened. Finally, the three of us, it got kind of awkward and it didn't go perfect, but the three of us kind of were eating dinner. And then pretty soon he came down, he had a pillow.
Oh, in front of his face?
Over his face. And he like kind of walked by, hi.
Oh, sweet. So we got hungry, basically, bottom line.
Yeah.
And then pretty soon, and I remember Rick was great about it. He, to this day, I can honestly say he's been fantastic with my children, which is why I did make the decision to marry him. He knows his role. And we always talk about that. You kind of have to know your role because there is a mom and there is a dad, a real mom and a real dad, you know, and like, you're not that.
Biological parents are different. Right,
And that is a role that they are always going to be loyal to that of that parent. And I think that people need to realize that, and you have to be very smart about it and know your role. And Rick kind of just said, "Hey," he said, "Hey, buddy," he said, "you want to shoot some hoops?" And that was it. Anyway, they all
warmed up
because they did go outside. And they kind of shot baskets. And then, that's kind of how, I think that's what worked.
That's cool. Well, and then what I remember at your wedding is, so now you have your two at home, Angela, because they're not out of the house yet. And then Rick, your youngest son. And so now Brooks and your son, they're like brothers. And I think, I mean, it just sounds to me like the, I don't know, the love in the family grew. So would you say that that's about right? Everyone's kind of excited to be in this larger family now?
I think, definitely. I think so. And that's what we, I remember when we told the kids we were engaged, we did it on, we kind of told them first on purpose. And that's what we've always kind of said is our goal is that, we want to put them first and just have a lot of open communication and start making kind of our own traditions with all of us, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not, we've always said it's not perfect. It's not always going to be perfect, but I think they're all doing pretty darn well.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
All things considered. Yeah.
I think the big crave. Oh, go ahead.
No, you go, Rick.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think the kids crave being together as a unit, you know. And once again, I'm not their real dad, but I know that they respect me, and I think that, and then my kids respect her because we earned it. And we also made it clear that we're still the adults, you know. We're not going to let them, you know, push us around, because they'll try to, you know, twist you and make decisions and whatever. But you know, it's just, whether it's something simple, which is hard to do in today's world with everyone being busy, but just sitting down and having dinner at the table, they enjoy it.
I think so too. I think that's kind of another key thing when you get a divorce and have kids, is those kids, I think, there's many things that you mourn, but they miss that family unit. They miss, you know, all of a sudden it goes from four or six to two, and you're sitting there. They miss that family unit, kind of all doing something. So I think that's what I think they kind of all like, is having family dinners and doing stuff together. And so we try to make that a priority.
That's great. I think you guys are doing a wonderful job on that.
I mean, we've never been on a vacation, the two of us, you know,
it's always been with the kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how, and people even, we didn't even go on a honeymoon, and people can't believe that, but it's like, we just, and we know we'll get there someday, but that's just how, I think that's how much focus there is. Probably on the kids.
It's where you are right now. It just sounds like you're just living in the here and now, which is great. I do want us to get into just this, you know, kicking the heck out of plan B, but I don't want us to miss how hard it was, if you're open to sharing some of the, you've mentioned the devastation of divorce, and maybe there's just a little bit of perspectives, and I don't want to go back in time because you're not going that direction, as I think, Angela, you mentioned in a quote that you saw, but can you kind of give a little bit of a recap on some of what you did face, and then anything that helped you get through it, aside from the tribe that you talked about?
It's like a death. I mean, it's not, you know, I put that lightly, because obviously it's not, but you do go through almost a mourning process, I think, when you get a divorce, because your world is shattered and your dreams are gone, and your life changes, and you mourn that person and that life, and then not only that, but then it breaks up a whole family. It doesn't just break up your family unit of four. You all of a sudden you divorce like a whole family. You don't get to see that side of the family, and vice versa, and so changes. And I think one of the hardest parts is, again, like I said, I remember being so angry about, I didn't have kids to not see them 100% of the time. That was one of my most devastating, like the most anger I think I've ever had, was I didn't have them to see them 50% of the time.
And you were like, and I don't want to not see them. Like, it wasn't like, and I want to do this with my free time. It was like, those were the days that you were home and in bed and like having a hard time getting
through. But every counselor and everybody, at least in Omaha, will tell you, you know, the best thing to, they have to see the other parent. And, you know, that is, you know, ultimately the wisest thing is, you don't want to, like, you know, but you do have to, it's important for those kids to see that parent, you know? Yeah. I remember being kind of like, I remember I was like, well, I'm fighting for full custody. I'm fighting for full, you know, and it's like, I was told they're out of the gig. You're probably, you know, not going to get it. But
it wasn't best for the kids.
It's not
like they have a loving father who loves them, and they
Even
wanted to maintain
think
that.
He's the worst person on earth at that time. It's unfortunately it's not that bad in the eyes of, you know, the court. You know, there's much worse out there. And even though he didn't love me, you know, he still loves his kids, and you know, he's a good father. So, but I mean, I'll never forget. I remember it happened right around the 4th of July. And I remember being at my mom's, because that's where we always go for the 4th of July. And I remember I felt like I was just in this dark cloud. Like, I just remember I was so devastated. I had a huge pit in my stomach. It was so much, like, it was sad and so, like, surreal, like a surreal sadness. And that was like one of the worst nights. It was bad.
So yeah, when you, and then I want to go to Rick, you as well, but you talked about like the anger, not only anger of like, then you only got to have your kids 50% of the time, but obviously the anger of the shattering of this life and this world that you fought. How did you deal with the anger? Like, what are the tips that you found to move through that anger, which is obviously a stage of grief and mourning, but then moving towards acceptance? What worked for you?
Me?
Yeah. And then we'll go to Rick, but I want to keep on that thread with you.
Well, it's funny. Well, so that's an interesting with me because many people said to me, I can't believe like I would have done so many things. I didn't go off the deep end. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I actually think I probably should have a little bit more. Like I should have probably expressed that a little bit more. I think, honestly, the worst thing I did was tear up a couple of his t-shirts. And people laugh at that because they're like, could have done a lot more. You know, I was being told to do a lot more worse things because of what he did, you know, but I don't know. I quickly, for some reason, and I don't know if it's probably part of my personality because I'm kind of calm, but I quickly almost found more revenge in being peaceful.
Oh, you know what I mean? Interesting.
Like I almost felt like, you know what, I am going to rise above this. Because I think the quicker I can get happy and close the door on this, I think the more I will thrive. Like, does that make sense?
It makes a ton of sense. Yeah. It sounds like a very secure, confident-oriented way to move through. I mean, that would be like the ideal. So wonderful that is your experience.
I thought to myself, boy, like it was kind of my way of like, I'll show him. I'm going to show him by being super happy and peaceful. I'm not going to go. It was almost like that's probably what he wants is for me to go down the ugly road. So, yeah. You know, so, and I was like, I'm not going to do that.
Plus, yeah.
When I would do that, I thought you don't feel good about yourself. And I know it's really hard because, you know, like I said, I've had other women say to me, oh my gosh, you know, I did this and you know, mm-hmm. I deep end. Nasty, nasty things. But yeah, I just kind of stayed a little bit more like calm. And I kind of chose.
What I'm hearing is it is going to be a different experience for everyone, right? How we get through it, what our processing is.
For sure.
So Rick, I'm curious too from you, what was your process and what were some of the emotions that came up and how did you deal with them?
I did some of the textbook stupid stuff. I mean, hung out with some of the wrong people, drinking, you know, all that, just to, you know, be transparent. I mean, I didn't go off the deep end, but, you know, I went through a phase where I really didn't care about much. I cared about my kids. I was just like, whatever. And once again, I wasn't mourning the loss of my spouse. I was mourning the loss of the family unit. The perception that, you know, it's somewhat embarrassing to go, you know, when you're, everyone thinks you got it going on, and then they were like, "What the? You get hit by a Mack truck, you know?" Because everyone keeps their problems inside their own home, right?
Yeah, like,
you want to look perfect to the outside world, but so, and that, you know, I went through a few months of that. I don't know, and then you just slowly come out of it. I dug in spiritually, you know. That was a big part of my healing, was just getting closer to God and spending more time with Him. And just, and it takes, once again, I'm giving the Cliff Notes version. It takes, you know, it took a few years to get to where I was at, to even be in a decent spot to meet her. And when I met her, I still wasn't. I always talk about, I hit the valley and I was coming up when I met her. Mm-hmm. And so, and now I think now I'm at the peak, but I would never be at the peak had I not met her, because, you know, she brought me there. So
yeah, together you climbed out.
Yes.
I remember you saying something in your toast at the wedding too, that you basically had full transparency with Angela at one point, saying, I'm not in the best place. Can you say a little bit more about that conversation? I think that's sweet.
I mean, so I was like, my quote at the wedding was, I didn't have much to offer her.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't. I mean, I was kind of coming off of I had a decent job, but
that's good.
Yeah.
That you were providing for your family. Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I was living with some roommates at the time and just kind of, you know, float. I was just kind of in neutral. I mean, I wasn't growing or excelling or anything like that. And, you know, I was missing a tooth.
That's right.
I just kind of cracked it. I wanted to let it, it was back here, so she couldn't really hardly see it. But that's one of the jokes. Like, I didn't even have a tooth. I had to wait like 6 months to get an implant.
We were in a good spot. It's kind of a disaster. And it's true. Because, he went through a really tough time. And then you know, I was a stay-at-home mom. So I didn't have a job. You know, and that was the other thing is, you know, like, you know, he had a master's and had a very thriving career. And then you go and then you're like, you know, obviously you get support for a few years, but so you have to start from scratch.
Yeah.
It's very scary.
Yeah.
I remember
go ahead.
Being very, very scared too. Like a lot of that's, I remember being scared a lot.
Yeah.
I would just lay in bed and be like, oh my gosh, like, what am I going to do?
Right. And then that fear and that doubt can just take over and ruminate in the thoughts where you never think you're going to break out of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Because one day you have this like support and then he leaves you.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're kind of like, oh my gosh, like I am all alone.
Yeah.
You know, and then everyone's kind of looking at you like you got to climb out of this eventually. You know, and you got to dig deep and find a new and provide.
Provide, yeah, exactly. Because you were then like, how do I do this, right? I need to have some now financial providership that's going to go on.
Yeah.
And Rick's, go ahead. No, you go, Rick.
That was pretty early on that I had that conversation with her because I knew I liked her and I didn't want to, first of all, you don't want it, I would have felt like I was hiding something from her, you know? And it wasn't like, I wasn't in a van down by the river, but, you know, it wasn't great.
But for you, you didn't feel like you were at your best version of yourself.
Not even,
yet.
No, and from where I came from, I mean, I was fairly successful in career, and I don't, you define that word in different ways, but things were just a lot different. And so, I was just honest with her and, I literally gave her the chance. I said, if you want to hit the eject button, you 100% can, no hard feelings.
That is true.
And
that must have been so hard for you to say, because inside you were already in love, right? You're like, okay, I'm giving her an option to get out. What happens?
I don't know if I loved her. Yeah, I knew that was possible because it was like probably our fifth or sixth date. I mean, I'd said it pretty early on.
Okay.
So I was like, I gotta let this girl know that I got a little bit of baggage I'm still working through here before.
Before
I did fall in love with her. And then, oh, by the way, I wasn't going to do that to her.
Yeah,
sure.
So
that's respectful.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. What was your response, Angela?
Well, I remember I came home after he kind of told me his whole story and where he was at, which, we just choose to keep it a little bit private. But I remember I came home and I called my mom, the chief, and I was just like, you know, what do you think of this? And she said, what do you think of that? She said, she goes, do you like him? And I said, and I remember being like, I do. I really like him. She goes, well, then she goes, I wouldn't let anything like that. She goes, you're not making any life decisions right now. Anyway, you know, you're not marrying this person right now. Anyway, just if you're enjoying his company, she goes, I would just follow your heart.
Yeah.
And that is kind of what I did. And that's why when we joke, like, I kind of rolled the dice, you know, I did roll the dice and I just chose to just support him because I think we always laugh. I think some people would have probably, if you were into material things, you probably would have hit the eject button.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, I think a lot of people would in today's world. And so funny story, it was on a walk that I told her this and we get there and she's like, we got out of the car and we start walking. I'm holding her hand. She goes, did you bring me here to kiss me? Because I hadn't even kissed her yet.
Okay.
And I was like, no, actually, I got to talk to you about some stuff. I want to kiss you, but hold on.
Oh, I love it.
Right now.
Yeah, I got some roommates. My life is heading right now. And
Oh, that's awesome. A little different from what the plan may have been, huh?
Yeah, and I meant to say this in my toast, and I totally forgot, but what I did have to give her was my love. That's what I gave her.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you. Well, when we were, Angela, you were saying that you saw something at, I think it was Kohl's. You saw some sign when it was really time for you to turn things around. Could you say that? Because I think the quote is so hopeful. Yeah. Sometimes people just need like a little affirmation or a little something just to get them through.
Yeah. I remember being at Kohl's shortly after I got divorced, and I was super I was depressed. You go through a depression and all that, and I remember being at Kohl's, and I saw this little board, this sign, a picture, and because I even took a picture of it, and it said, it just said, yeah, don't look back. You're not going that way. Yeah.
Powerful.
Yeah. Don't look back. You're not going that way. And I thought to myself, that is exactly right. And I remember I've gotten to where I am today by a lot of really good quotes, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let's dive into some of this healing then that the two of you feel like you've really done together. What is it that helps you? I know, Rick, you talked about leaning into spirituality. What helps you focus on what you think matters most now that you've been through this roller coaster ride? And now that you've come out of it, you've kind of landed in a place of like, oh, this is what love could feel like. What helps you?
I think just, you know, the spiritual side has become, you know, and I'm not perfect by any means, and I'm not Bible beater, or I don't care what anybody's beliefs are. It's just my personal journey. And I tell my kids this, all I know is when I'm not plugged in to God and have relationship with him, things just don't seem to go very well. And when I am plugged in, they go well. That's all I keep it that simple. That's all I know. And so that's been a huge part of my journey, but then also just communication with her of both what, you know, wants and needs and things like that. And knowing that, you know, maybe we'll tackle this later, but we don't fight, which no one probably believes us. I mean, we've had a couple disagreements here and there, but if we have an argument or something, I mean, it lasts a half hour and it's done and we flush and it never even gets brought up again. And so I think just having that, and part of it's, I don't ever want to go back to where I was, you know, ever. And it's just, it's almost like a starting over, or a plan B, whatever you want to call it. But, and that to me, I have a little bit of humility too, is that, you know, if you don't want to go back to where you were, stumble, you got to be a little humble at times and just do the right thing. And I don't know, it's just a daily process, but things just seem to go smooth. I can't really explain it. I mean, I don't know.
That's awesome. No, you did a great job. And I think in our intake call, you talked about too, it's like, it is like a daily commitment. And that commitment is to love your partner. The faith is a part of that. And just the wisdom that comes with, and maybe that's where the quotes can help too, right? There's truth and nuggets of wisdom in that. And that's part of this podcast, you know, the real eyes realize real truth. And that truth is coming from these nuggets of, you know, wisdom, and that's love and that's compassion. And those are the things that can ride us through. How about you, Angela?
By the way, did you know? So I stole that from Leroy. I stole that from my uncle.
I did not know that. No, you know, there's a book from Sheryl Sandberg called Plan B.
Well, and I don't know where he got it from. I guess I don't even know if I've ever talked about it, but you know, after our aunt passed away, and you know, I remember he had that on his license plate because, you know, obviously she passed away and it was not planned. And, so he had to, you know, kind of move on with his life. And,
I did not know that. That's cool.
Yeah. He had on his license. So I always remember like, that's kind of cute. Like, you know, cause yes, if plan A doesn't work, which you kind of wanted, you're kind of left to, well, this is plan B.
This is plan B.
And plan B can be just as great, if not greater, you know?
Yeah. And that's what I think plan B, when I see it through you two, plan B is beautiful. Plan B is hopeful. Plan B is highly partnership oriented. And you mentioned humbleness and family we talked about. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, Angela, if there's other things that you see now in this relationship that you're valuing even deeper about what's keeping the two of you so deeply in love and together.
Well, you know,
you're modeling.
You never want to, we talk about this a lot, you know, you never, the first relationship will never be void to me because at the time I thought it was authentic. I was younger. We had two beautiful children together. But I can honestly say, it's very different this time around, but I think that's because I'm a different person. You know, and I've learned a lot. And I think you learn to I think you kind of learn to, you know what you want in life a little bit when you get a little bit older. I think it's important to, I always think to myself when I talk to younger girls, like dating and stuff, like, do you know what you want? Like, I think that's a really valid question to ask yourself. I think you have to know what you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if this is important to you, I think it's okay to know what you want.
And I think that what you want, what I see is it's around character and values and, you know, some aspects of like personality and what you feel is compatible. You know, it may not be, I want to have somebody who's 6'7", blue eyes and drives a red Ferrari. I mean, that might be part of it, but like, it's really usually more about the person.
No,
right?
It was, yeah. And like, I can honestly say like in my first relationship, it lacked a lot of spirituality. And, faith and going to church and things like that. We kind of went through the motions, but, it was not there and a lot of communication. There was not a lot of good, but communication is key. So,
And kind of just to put a little bow on this, I know when we were talking earlier, what I really loved about what the two of you said is some of the things that matter, aside from obviously family and the blended family and the humbleness, it's also be open to apologize, forgive easily, like have that ability to move on. And that may be part of the key, Rick, to what you were saying is you don't have many disagreements or you don't stay in disagreement very long because you're able to nip it early before it gets exacerbated. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's about right.
Don't get me wrong. I've had to apologize a few times, which I have no problem doing. But she forgives and moves on. And I did not have that before.
Yeah.
It was, hey, let's talk about this 6 months later. That wasn't a big deal to me, but maybe it turns into, it's just like, she's just awesome at.
Yeah, that's great.
She calls it flush. She flushes it.
That's awesome.
But that's also something I've learned to do.
Yeah.
And I always say to myself too, I think it's really important as I look back, I'm not going to say I owned 50% of the problems I had in the first marriage, but I can see where I was tough. And I think that's another key thing is being humble and trying to figure that out. It's like, I can see I own some of that.
Yeah.
I own some of that maybe misery that was going on or some of the problems. I absolutely do. So yeah, I think it's important to kind of know that.
Well, what I hear in that is accountability. And nobody is. I mean, to have a fallacy that anybody is perfect, I think is just that, a fallacy. And it's a pipe dream. And so to own who you are and your part, keep your side of the street clean, so to speak, seems to be like a really important thing.
And I think too, I think at the end of the day, and I think this is where the first marriage blew up, is when those storms came. I think you have to have a partner that weathers those storms with you a little bit and doesn't leave, I think, and that's where, like, when we have problems, it's just much easier to kind of combat them a little bit and talk through them and things like that.
Yeah, that's great. Well,
I'm not scared of them. I remember being
like intimidated.
I remember I felt very much like I was walking on eggshells in the first relationship. So, and I don't have that with Rick.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like you both are at a feeling good about who you are individually. And then together, when you're in this relationship, that you get to be the best version of yourself. And again, that's not perfect, right? There's no perfection. But because of that, there's more of an invitation maybe to just be who you are. And that authenticity becomes part of why you love your partner. Because you get to love them and all of them in that organic, authentic kind of sense. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. Well, we're going to kind of close this out with our collective questions, which are just spontaneous lightning speed. I'm going to ask each of you a question and then I'll bop to the other one and we'll go back and forth. But before we do, I just wanted to kind of pause and say, if there's anything else you feel you'd like to share to kind of recap, not only your story, but your healing, for listeners to maybe hold on to. And Rick, I'll have you start.
Sure. I would, first of all, just, don't give up hope. If you have to always have hope and don't put a time frame on it. If someone, and I didn't say this earlier, I wish everyone the best with their current, if someone's listening to this and they're in a marriage that's having trouble, my advice is fight for it until you can't fight anymore. And there is times where that happens, you know, and it does, but it has, both people have to fight. If mm-hmm. only one person's fighting for it, you know, then it's probably best to move on. Once that happens, just keep hope, keep the faith, surround yourself with some great people, and do not put a time frame on it. And whether it takes 6 months to heal or 6 years, time goes by inevitably anyway. So just be patient. And if finding someone else is something that you want to do, then mm-hmm. then hold out and search for that. And if not, go be the best person that you can be. But like, just, yeah, find what you want to do or who you want to be, and just have hope and go for it.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. How about you, Angela? Anything as a recap?
Something that I think a lot of marriages do wrong, or a lot of divorced people do wrong too, that I would be another big piece of advice for me, and that I think that we've done really well, is you cannot fight. You cannot throw that other person under the bus. Meaning with the father of, like,
your ex now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard, because there's times when you want to, say mean things, but it's best, to not do that. And the more you can keep from just being very neutral and not ever getting into that, drama or situation where you're, talking badly about them, or, the more you can just be very positive, I think is the best thing for the kids. Because, and I remember, I forget, somebody said this to me, but at the end of the day, when you put down the dad, you're ultimately putting down your child, because that's them. They are 50% the ex. So when you're talking badly about him in front of them, they feel bad about themselves. And I remember one of my good friends said that to me, and I thought, that is really profound. And I think that that is one of the mistakes that a lot of newly divorced people do, is they get those kids kind of involved in some of the issues, and you've got to keep them separate. You know, yeah. Does that make sense?
It does. Well, it sounds like that's where anger can invoke those kinds of actions, I think. And so the ability to kind of mitigate and have the anger be looked upon in different ways, but not bringing the kids into it, sounds really healthy.
Yeah. And I think that was probably one of the other reasons why I tried to quickly get out of the anger phase. It was for the kids.
Yeah.
They don't want to see an angry parent. They want to know that mom can thrive and be mm-hmm. happy.
So. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Well, thank you. So, Angela, I'm going to have you go first with these collective questions. Okay. And I'm curious, what are you currently reading or watching? What's going on with you right now?
Reading or watching. I'm not reading anything. Watching.
Maybe Rick, if you want to go, because if you watch things together, you could say so as well.
We're bad. Sport,
we've been so busy. Yeah.
So busy.
Kid sports is what we watch.
Kid sports. That's sports. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys have a busy schedule.
I'm okay with the TV not being on, and I need to read more.
That's cool. Awesome. Rick, I'm going to have you go first on this one. If you could eat dinner and engage in dialogue with anyone past or present, who would it be?
I've always thought about this. It would be Jesus in a heartbeat. I mean, to be able to talk to him and have dinner with him, it would be fantastic.
It'd be a great dinner, huh? Yeah. How about you, Angela? How would you answer that?
I wish I could probably have dinner with, like, my grandfather again, or my dad, you know?
Yeah. Just talk to them about just where you are and have some dialogue. Yeah, that's awesome. When you think about practices, and Angela, I'll go to you first on this one, practices that you may do or say to yourself when challenges arise, just to remind you how to show up, what comes up? Practices or things you do or say?
Ask it again, Chris.
Ask it again. Yes.
Yeah. And it may be what you saw at Kohl's that day. You know, don't look in the rearview mirror. Keep going ahead. Like, I'm just wondering if there's anything that just keeps you going
that way. Flush it.
Flush it. I like that. That's a good technique. Flush it.
She does say turn the
page. I do. Even with my kids and when I see them struggling over a bad day or a bad pitch or like you, I think that mental, you've got to turn that page quick.
Yeah, I love that. How about you, Rick? What reminds you in terms of how you want to show up when challenges arise? What do you do or say?
Well, it depends on what the challenge is. So I have two different ways. Sometimes I overreact and get a little hostile. It's like I have that in my blood.
You're human, basically, is what you're saying, right?
I can just kind of snap and I'm not breaking windows or anything like that, you know, but I can overreact at times and get a little quick before I, you know, decompress and really think things through or just sit in silence. So it's two different ends of the spectrum depending on what the circumstance is.
Yeah. So what do you do to remind you though, how you want to show up? What does your healthy self do to kind of break out of those spirals?
Gosh, I don't even know if I have, I'm a pretty reactionary person. So I don't know if I have that in me.
Okay.
And you know, it's funny. So in my past life, I used to be silent treatment girl.
Ah.
Yes.
Not anymore? Yeah.
Not anymore. No, that doesn't work. Like I said,
now is that, I got something to tell you. Get over here.
I think when you go through something like that, you have to look in the mirror a little bit too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to end it with this last question. And Rick, I'll go to you first. And then Angela, what are you most grateful for today?
Well, that's easy. I mean, that's her. And it's not only her, it's the full package. It's that our kids are all on board. We've talked about her exes. I get along great with her ex-husband. You know, but she gets along great. She doesn't see my ex-wife as much. I see Kyle quite a bit, you know, and so we all get along. Our blended family gets along. I'm just grateful for the full package, and we're very blessed because I don't think that happens very often in divorces and things like that. So it's not just her, but her family. I mean, you, the cousins, I mean, everybody has embraced me, and I feel like you're my family, like everyone's my, like they are my family. Like yesterday, we went out for her stepdad's birthday, you know, and it was like, this is my family, and that's how I feel. So I'm just blessed and thankful for all of that, the full package.
Yeah, they kind of accepted him pretty quickly, and yeah, they were devastated too.
Yeah, that's like you said, it happens to the whole family.
Yeah.
You know, there is that really great book, Conscious Uncoupling, you know, and I think it's been made very popular with Gwyneth Paltrow, but there is an uncoupling that's needed. And it's nice when you can move through that with consciousness and mindfulness.
I'm familiar with that and that whole deal. And that is the smart way to do it.
Yeah. And what we'll do just for our listeners, we'll put like a little reading list together because I know that there were some books that helped you through and we'll add that one to it. So our gift from Angela and Rick will be just some recommended reading that really helped through the tough times to kind of get you to this place of healing. So Angela,
when I first got a divorce, but yeah.
I know. You dive in, right? I need help. It's like you're looking for the lifeline. So Angela, what about you? What are you most grateful for today?
I think I'm most grateful for today, and we actually just said this the other day. I'm just really happy. Yeah. I'm really happy. And, you know, that's another thing that people say that to me a lot now is like, you finally look happy. And in my first marriage, I was told I didn't look happy. You know, I was kind of going through the motions. I think I just kind of got beat down a little bit, you know, whether he knew he was doing it or not. I think it was just a slow erosion.
Yeah.
Is what happened to that first one, you know, and then, but I can honestly say I'm very much, I'm happy. I'm just more of my authentic self. And again, I think we're thriving. We're finally thriving.
Yeah, it feels good.
And the kids are thriving. And so right now, it feels good. So
that's awesome.
That's the other thing is like, those kids grow up so fast. It's like, you know.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Then they're out of the house and you're oh, how did that all happen?
Yeah, I know.
So, well, I am deeply grateful for the two of you. And Rick, you are family. It's been wonderful to get to know you. And of course, Angela, I've loved you since the moment you came into this world. And I just really thank you. I know that this was not easy for us to schedule this. Very busy schedules across the board, time differences. But I really thank you for carving out time and to be so brave and courageous of sharing your story so that others can also benefit. So thank you.
No problem.
Love to the both of you.
Yes.
Thank you for tuning in to another impactful conversation here on the Real Eyes, Realize podcast. We hope you take some time to let the wisdom of these stories that are shared here today sink in. And we welcome you to engage with us on our social channels, realeyes.love on Instagram or Facebook. We also have links in our show notes to our guests, and we invite you to visit our website, realeyes.love. Here you will find an online resource hub, and this is where we offer gifts from our guests to all of our listeners. These resources can help all of us create our own positive ripple effects, actualizing love in this world. If you have any other individuals you would like us to interview, please do let us know. We love hearing your ideas for compelling stories to share. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. And thank you for doing all that you do in the name of love and service in our world. Be true, be bold, be real, and thank you for listening.